The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
I'm delighted Catherine Corliss is with us today. She has written Belonging, a memoir of place, beginnings, and one woman's search for truth and justice for the Tuam babies. Catherine, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here on The Last Word today. When you were growing up in Tuam, what did you know of the mother and baby home as you passed it every day on your way to school?
I did indeed, Matt, and thank you for having me on. I've just have vague memories because, I mean, the home closed in 1961 and I would have been at school maybe a year and a half or so at that stage. So my memory is very vague. I just remember little children, scared looking, not allowed to talk to them. They were on their own. And I suppose we all did wonder a little why we weren't allowed to talk to these children. So that would be my only memory. And then passing those big high 10-foot walls which surrounded the Tuam home. We had to pass there every single day going in and out. And it was a bit scary because right across the road, there was another 10-foot high wall which ran for maybe half a mile or so because it was the Tuam race course. So it was a long stretch and it was a bit scary. I remember that.
The fact that even though you were encouraged or discouraged from talking to other children, at any stage, when did that hit you as being a strange thing? And were there ever conversations in subsequent years after the place closed as to why it had been there and who was there?
Well, absolutely not, Matt. Once the home closed in 1961, it was as if it never happened. Even into my teenage years, a housing estate was put up there where the home was. The home was knocked. A housing estate went up and it was just all forgotten about. If anyone was talking about it at all, they would talk about the old workhouse because that was there prior to the mother and baby home. It was the same building and the same few acres. So it would be mainly the workhouse. And there were articles written on the workhouse and books and everything and articles in the local library. But the Tuam home itself was never mentioned at all. And it's only when I started researching that I thought that a bit peculiar. I could get a lot of stuff on the workhouse. There's even old ledgers you could look at. But it's as if the home itself never existed, which was peculiar.
It's extraordinary, really, yeah. When you think of it. But what got you interested in researching it?
Well, it was just accidentally, really. I suppose the Tuam Society, the old historical Tuam Society, they had a journal coming out every year. And after I did my my local history course, I had learned how to research and I had written a few articles about the locality and about the history of the landlords and the land. And they asked me to contribute a few articles from year to year. So this time they asked me, would I be able to write another article, another chapter for their journal? So I said, what about the Tuam home? There's very little on it. So I said, they agreed and said, go ahead, see what you can find. And that's how it really started, Matt, right at the very beginning of my research.
And remind our listeners, please, of the horrors that you unearthed.
I had no idea at the time what I was... what I was starting into back in 2011 it was, because the article was to be published in December 2012. So I started out looking for a bit of history on the home itself and a bit about the Bonsecours sisters, and that's about all I had in it, really. So by delving into research, by going to the libraries, by asking people, that's how I really started off. And I had no idea at all. I had no idea that there were so many babies, children buried on the site. I didn't even know there was one child buried there. So that was horrific when I got into that end of my research.
796 children.
Yes.
Is the
missing.
Total figure.
Missing. Yeah.
And but, buried, and yeah. Some of them in under a disused septic tank. But you know what struck me, Catherine, is dreadful and horrific as that is, what made it worse was what you've been able to piece together on the circumstances in which many of those children died. Because it strikes me that they were sort of just left with all sorts of treatable illnesses and that there wasn't simply enough care or bother taken to try and help those children survive.
There wasn't, Matt, and not a trace of them left. There wasn't even a little cross or anything on the site where they were discarded into. And it was only by my research that I got all the 796 death certs of children who actually died in the home. And when I found that, there was no going back. I had to find out where on earth were they, what happened to them. And it was horrific because, I mean, when I looked at the causes of death then, there was a lot of, there was a lot of measles and there was a lot of, there was some diphtheria and there was gastroenteritis was a big one. And, I mean, as far as gastroenteritis, I wondered at that because, I mean, to say, the Bonsecours sisters were a nursing congregation. They had skills in nursing and hygiene. And surely to goodness, that at least could have been avoided because we know measles took a lot of children in the 1930s, 40s and maybe into 50s. But with care and nursing skills, I wondered why were so many left to die? And it's only with further research and from talking to people and from listening to their stories, I realised that it was utter pure neglect in most of the cases, that they were illegitimate. They were looked upon at one stage as the devil's spawn, as we know, in the earlier stages, maybe of the 40s. And there was just no respect for them, no respect for their mothers. And they were a lesser class citizen than the people of the town. So they were just discarded, really. And it proves it when you see how they were discarded into a disused sewage system and placed one on top of the other down into the chambers of that tank. So it's utter, total just neglect and just discarding and I don't know how the nuns felt about them, but to do that to babies and young children, and I mean, they were all baptised, and we know in canon law, it states that anyone who is baptised must get a dignified burial in consecrated ground. But there was a different rule for those illegitimate children, unfortunately.
And also in your research, I think what was also very striking was that the lack of apology or contrition from those in the religious orders who bore responsibility, even if they didn't directly, maybe all of those who were there at the time were dead at that stage, but those who had sort of inherited their responsibilities seemed almost indifferent to it or just defensive about it.
Well, if they're the words to use, Matt, defensive and just totally ignoring the whole thing and just not caring. Because at the outset, they were the first ones. Of course, I contacted their headquarters is in Cork. And I contacted them to ask them for some help, that I had all those death certs and we must find out where all those children are buried. And I just got a blank, we know nothing. We weren't there. And their concern was the publicity that was falling upon them and with the press at their door trying to get answers. And that's the help that I got from them. And the same came from the church in Tuam as well. They seemed to know nothing, or they said they knew nothing. They had no records. They knew nothing about the burials there, neither did the county council. And that's what I've been up against for years, trying to get proof of what I was saying. And that's the struggle that I had.
Catherine, how have you managed to cope with that struggle? Because this must have taken an enormous emotional toll on you to be discovering these things and also struggling perhaps to get the right people interested in it.
It was a struggle, Matt, absolutely. But somehow or another, there was something in me that just wouldn't give in. And the more they tried to block me, the more determined I became to find answers. And it's only through that struggle and with the help and support of my own family. And I just kept going. And I just knew I had to find out. I had to do something for those children because, well, the fact was nobody in authority and who could have helped would help or care. So it was a struggle. But thank goodness I got the records that I needed. I got the proof that I needed. So when I got that, then there was no stopping me. I had to expose it. And the only way that I could keep going was to expose what I had found to the media, because I tried the proper authorities, first of all, but they dismissed me. They didn't want to listen. So it was the media, really, that carried the story right through the years and kept it alive. And I think only for that it would be conveniently forgotten about. And I'll go back to the two little boys who found the bones originally in the 1975 when they were playing in the site before the houses went up. And it was they've been well documented, Franny Hopkins and Barry Sweeney. They came across one of the chambers because the slab was broken. And of course, they told everybody. And they were fobbed off just as I was. The whole place was just covered in again. And they said there were probably famine bones, which I proved that that wasn't the case. So that's how hard it was and how hard-hearted the authorities were. They obviously knew quite well what was in that sewage system, but they didn't want it to be known for their own reasons. So I'm very grateful that they have been found. We know where they are. The legislation, that's the trouble nowadays. We're waiting on the government. We're waiting on Roderick O'Gorman to get this legislation passed as soon as possible. It's a legislation that they seem to need for a mass exhumation. So that is going slowly and slowly through the Dáil at the moment.
Don't those things always go slowly? Catherine Corliss, also in the book, you write about your own upbringing and about your mother. So how much of your mother's experiences and your relationship with her do you think perhaps informed and drove your determination to deal with this particular issue when you discovered it?
I think my mother, unknown to herself, played a huge part in my life, because since I was very young, somehow or another, I got on the wrong side of her. I really loved her. I loved her ways. I loved her kindness. I loved her outlook on life. She was always there for the unfortunate people, as she called them, the creatures, she used to call them, who needed help or who needed something. And that fairly rubbed off on me. But as regards our own relationship, I don't know where I went wrong. I used to blame myself. But it's probably because I suppose I was a little bit obstinate, she used to call me, because I wanted answers. Even from a young age, I wanted to know why. And I probably used to pester her. And it was only later on why I realised that she didn't want to talk about her past, because that was one of parts of me that wouldn't leave her alone. And it was only when she died, really, I looked back on, I decided to do research on her. And the first thing I did was to get her birth cert up in Cady in County Armagh. And I realised then that where there should be a father's name, that was blank. So I said, OK, I knew then she was illegitimate. And as time went on and with more research, when I started meeting survivors from the Tuam home, because of the research and because of the exposure to the media, I realised that what they were telling me, it dawned on me that she would have gone through the same system, that she wouldn't have a proper family life. And she wouldn't have known family, because through further research, I found she was fostered and went from home to home. And God only knows, what she went through. But she was a very strong woman.
Is it possible she might have been born in a mother and baby home herself?
Her birth cert stated that she was born in a house. Now, she had one sponsor for her baptism. And that shows then that that always shows that illegitimate babies, they nearly always only had one sponsor. And seeing that there was no father on the death cert, I was able, through further research, I was able to find out that she was in and out of foster homes. She was actually born in the house of a friend who stood for her as well. And I just imagine how lonely that must have been for her. So I was able to identify the way she was. The way she was, probably kind of very quiet in herself in lots of ways. She kept to herself. She had a great empathy for people who weren't doing well. She had a great empathy for people who might be disabled or anything like that. She had a lovely nature about her. And also she had low self-esteem, and she would always put herself last. And I noticed the same thing in the survivors that I met, because they had the same feeling that they weren't worthy, that they weren't good enough as the rest of the population, because they were illegitimate. And my mother kept that secret all her life, even from my own father. He never knew that her past. And that must have been a burden on her. And she wasn't able to give the affection that a mother and child would have. So it explained a lot when I did the bit of research on her. And I think it was through that, through knowing what she went through, I just probably felt I felt something in me I had to make up to her, because the fact that she didn't talk to us about her past all her life, it must have been harder on her. It must have been lonely. So probably by me helping survivors, by helping them, and I have given them a voice and they tell me that, I've given them courage. I suppose I wish I could have done that for her, and I wish she could have spoken to us about it throughout, you know, while we were growing up. But you see, it was a shame. It was a shame culture at the time, Matt, because as we know, the shame was put on women. It was all their fault. And it was a burden they had to carry, and it was a secret they had to keep. So unfortunately, that's the way it was for my mother. So she obviously did, unknown to myself, play a big part in what I have done.
Catherine, I'd imagine if there was any way that she could know what you'd done, she'd be so, so proud. Well, a memoir of place beginnings and one woman's search for truth and justice for the Tuam babies. The book is called Belonging. There's been help given and co-writing by Naomi Lenehan. Catherine Corliss, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today here on The Last Word of Today FM.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much.
Catherine is taking part in the online courts festival this Thursday, where she'll be in conversation with Quailin Hogan. The tickets are available via eventbrite.ie.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.